Well, those of you who were here for the Sunday School Hour, you got the treat to hear Rick and Elizabeth Arnold share how they came about starting their ministry, I guess is the best way to say it. That's about the time I met them. Early 80s. I think it was 1983, 84. I met Elizabeth, and then shortly after that, Rick. The first memory I have of you, of Rick, is actually at your wedding. And I remember walking, you were standing outside getting ready to go in, and your bow tie was crooked. And I said, stop everything. And I went over and straightened up your bow tie. I don't know if you remember that or not. But that was my first memory. Yeah, I'm sure he did. But what a blessing they have been to the body of Christ, to our family. I've gotten to know them through the years. Their parents, Elizabeth's parents, were Karen's and our mentors. I'm sure I got some of those plurals wrong, but have helped us through the years. And know her brother and sister very well, too. And it's just, they've been a blessing to us. And so excited that you get to come up and share with us again today. And continue on from where you left off earlier, Sunday School Hour. And I know we're not going to get to hear as much of you as we want to, but we'll continue on afterwards for session three at our house after church, and we'll have barbecue chicken. Anybody wants to come, we got plenty of food there to enjoy, and you can continue to hear Rick and Elizabeth there too. So without further delay, Rick and Elizabeth, if you'll come up and share what God's laid on your heart.
Bigger my color. Favorite color.
Okay. Right. You got purple.
You forgot to tell me you taught me how to play rook.
Oh, I forgot to tell him.
Better not talk about that. Yeah, just a little word. I saw in the brochure it said Jim Arnold. I do have a brother named Jim, actually. Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, I had no idea. Well, I just wanted to correct that. It's Rick.
It's Rick.
But Jim is a good guy too. So, yeah. So, for those that don't know where Senegal is. We have a map right there, and that little colored in section is the country of Senegal. And it's the most western. It sticks out the furthest of any other country there. So it's the most western country on the continent of Africa. And we have been involved in this country for the past 28 years. Next. Our little clicker thing isn't working, so he will do it for us.
All right, so to catch everybody up on our family, this part that I like the best. But want to share about our kids. This past time when we left 5 years ago, we were just six in our family, the two of us and our four kids. And when we landed at the airport, we had three new sons-in-law and two new grandbabies. So part of the sacrifice of being a missionary is that you aren't there for the first dates, and as they start to get to know each other, as they get more serious, get engaged in that. So that was a huge transition in the dynamics of our family to have all of those involved there. Annalise is our oldest one, and December 2017, she got married in Bakel. As she started to date Jack and they started to get serious, she said, if you want to marry me, you've got to come back home, to my family, to my friends, all the people that mean the most to me in the world. And he was from a very, very southern town of Alabama, Fairhope, Alabama. So he'd never been out of the United States, but he's a very adventuresome guy, and he said, absolutely, love to. We met him at the airport. Thankfully, 3 weeks later, they got married without any red flags in between. That was our first time to meet him ever. So that was pretty huge. It was a wonderful wedding. Half the wedding, she was in her Western wedding dress, and the other half of the wedding, she was in her Senegalese wedding dress. We had dancing and drums and food and fireworks, and everybody had just a wonderful time. First time that anybody from another country had come and had their wedding there. It didn't feel like we come from another country, and she didn't feel that way because she was born in Senegal and raised in Senegal, so she felt like it was for her. But anyway, very, very huge ministry, very great connection, and it's gone down in the annals of Bakel history. Next. So then my second daughter is Amanda Lee here, and her husband Rudy with their daughter Ray Lynn, and they call her Ray for short. My third daughter, Alyssa Lynn, her husband John, and their daughter Alina Marie, and they call her Lena or Lili for short. So Amanda Lee and Rudy, this was before they were married, came over also for the wedding for Annalise and Jack. Rudy is a wrestler. So he was very interested because wrestling is one of the top sports, probably equal to soccer, in Senegal, which is saying a lot for African countries. And so he had wrestled in college, and he wanted to be able to wrestle and have that cultural experience there. So we asked my husband if he would set up a wrestling match, and Rick said, absolutely, love to do that. We had done it many, many years ago for another team that had come out that had a wrestler on it, and he knew everybody would love to do that. So got around, and he asked people in the neighborhood if they wanted to. The neighborhood was thrilled because the champion of the region came from our neighborhood, so they knew they would have a very good representation for a wrestler. So he called in a guy who used to be a wrestler, and he gave him, because the rules between wrestling in America and wrestling in Senegal are different. So he explained all the different rules to him, and then the night came. It was the night before the wedding, so this was a pretty huge 24 hours. And they had lights on, and they had, you would walk around and like act like you're taking over the whole world, and they were all saying, this guy's going down, they don't know a thing about wrestling in America, because Senegalese, this is the top sport of our country, we've got this, they're going down.
The tom-toms, like, and the music was going.
Yep. And Rudy just smiled. He didn't understand what they were saying. We would tell him. But he just smiled. So the wrestling started. They started with little kids wrestling each other. And then they went up. And then Erickson wrestled his best friend. And he won. So that was kind of fun. And then it got into the big guys wrestling. So Rudy had to wrestle two people to meet the champion. The champion only had to wrestle one because he's the champion. And so he wrestled the first guy. And it took about just 30 seconds, but I don't think that guy was really a wrestler, so they still didn't think anything about that. So then the next guy he wrestled, he took him down in a minute, and all of a sudden the crowd got kind of quiet, so that guy must have been a pretty good wrestler. And they were like, wow, okay. And so then the champion came, and they started wrestling, and they wrestled, and I went out of bounds, had to be brought back in. They wrestled again, went out of bounds. Everybody's cheering. Everybody's shouting. They poured milk all over them. They put sand on them. They were yelling things and everything like that. It was crazy. It was in the dirt, so there's dust everywhere as well. And then Rudy and the champion were wrestling for the third time in the circle. And Rudy went to make a move. I'm not a wrestler, and I really haven't grown up with the sport, so I don't know everything about it, but he went to make a move, and I think in America, when you make a roll, whoever ends up on top pinning the other person down is the champion. But in Senegal, whoever shoulders the back touches first loses. So they went into a roll, and Rudy came out on top. And Rudy got up thinking, I've won. But his shoulders touched first when he went into the roll. So he actually lost. When I posted it on Facebook, all my American friends said, absolutely, of course he won. It's so clear to see. And all my Senegalese friends said, oh, we're so sorry. We give you sympathies. Poor Americans don't know really how to wrestle. Of course we won, etc. But again, the people just loved that they had somebody who came and had their wedding there, that they wanted to involve them in it, that they enjoyed and connected on their national sport, that they were involved, and that also went down into the annals of Bakel history. Okay, so Alyssa Lynn, I don't know if y'all have been, how long y'all have been involved with the prayer letters, but my third daughter had an immune system issue. At 4 years old, she was diagnosed, and they didn't think that she would live past 12. So already a miracle that she's 23, she's married, and that she's got a baby of her own. Just an amazing, just a miracle in front of my eyes to see her there and with her baby. She was tested last December, and all her numbers are now within the normal range, except one little part that's left that needs to be healed. But because she's here in the States, instead of way out in the bush, very easy, because there's 911, there's ERs, there's doctors, and all of those kinds of things. So quickly, Lena, her daughter, seems to be suffering from the very same thing. And so they've done a lot of tests on her. I can't go into all of it, but all I can say is that in the midst of a very sad diagnosis, we don't have it completely yet, but we know it's at least way worse than what Alyssa Lynn had. And she also has a second issue. She's down at Chan's Gainesville, and they're trying to do all these tests, bone marrow tests and things like that. That even in the midst of this sad journey, in a sense, that God's hand in miraculous ways has been putting together. This doctor just happened to be there this day, and it was just the right doctor to be able to see her, or this person was able to get her through with that type of insurance that she has to be able to be seen. Just over and over again, God's hand all through that. But if you think of it and you want to remember her, Lena, just pray for her mom and dad, her grandparents too, but most of all for Lena and what the diagnosis will be and what the changes will mean in that. Next one. All right, the last, the caboose. The last in the nest is my son, Erickson. This is his friend, Hamza. And a couple ones later on, you'll see his feet, so just remember his name. Erickson is a senior this year at Mandarin High in Jacksonville. And it has been a huge change for him in the school that he was in Dakar, Senegal. He had about 250 in his class from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. At public high school, there's like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 in his school. So that was already a huge change. And then finding his way around, it's just like this whole village that were to try to find the classrooms and stuff like that. But one of the huge things that he had is where we are in Senegal is also a target for terrorists. Because when they had attacks in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Ivory Coast, Senegal is one of the most stable countries in the entire continent of Africa. And they have also taken a very overt commitment to the United States and made a partnership, a lily pad partnership with them for humanitarian aid. The United States came in and helped with the whole Ebola crisis. And that was a huge, and it turned the tide to have that. They landed in Senegal and kept all their supplies and things like that so they could fly from there because they're that furthest western country. It's just a good landing area, but also for counterterrorism. And so they've come in there and they've also helped to teach all of that. Well, that puts a target on Senegal's back. And so the whole country had to go under kind of vigilance in being attacked in whatever ways. It could be an attack in the capital where they would choose a target that would hurt the most international countries at one time in a target. So that might be a restaurant where a lot of international people come and eat there or things like that. Or they do it way out in isolation, which was way out in the bush where we live. They'll kidnap somebody so that then they can hold them up for ransom and get money for all the things that they want to do. So we prayed, we made plans, we had go-to bags, we tried to do the best that we could in a country threat. We came to the States, and in the first 2 months of my son being in public high school, they had two shooting threats, a bomb threat, and a security threat. So all of a sudden, it wasn't just a country threat, it was right in the school that my son was at. And we had a really good time talking through the fact that the God who was with us in Senegal, you know, oftentimes we'll talk about missionaries who go from America to Africa, and they'll say, the God who was with you in America is the same God in Africa. But for my son, we said, the God who was with us, that we knew that he was with us every single day of things happening in Senegal, now is the same God who is with you in your public high school with all these threats going on. And that we can make plans, we can talk about options and things that need to be done. But again, it's the trust that God is writing our story, no matter what each page holds, that he is with us all the way to the end, whatever that might be. So that was a huge transition for him. Pray for him. He's adjusting to America. He's got all those big decisions about what's the next step? What are you going to major in? Where are you going? Where are you going to live? Your parents are going back to Africa. What's happening to you? He's got all those questions facing him.
And you can ask us more about our guard cats at the end of the thing. Next one. So Senegal has about 18 million people, so it's quite large. It's 94% Islamic, and has 36 different languages. Now these languages are completely different from each other, and so they have to be able to communicate with each other. And so French has become the official language. It's what's taught in the schools. The kids learn French from a very early age. So in communicating, when I go into the capital city, they probably won't, most of those officials don't know Soninke. So I can communicate to them in French and be able to get all my paperwork and vice versa. So French is what is taught. So we live in, if you were to fly into Senegal, you would fly into Dakar right there. And then you have two ways. You can take the long route out to Bakel, or you can take the long route out to Bakel. Either way, it's long. It's about 15 hours or more. If you don't have any problems along the way, it's about 12 to 15 hours. If you have some problems, it can be a lot longer. And it also depends if it's a rainy season or if it's not, because bridges will be washed out and that kind of thing. So as you go out towards Bacau, it's more and more like Sahara Desert. Everything is real dry, really hot, and the sand dunes are starting to take over and things like that. And there's probably the closest missionary to us. So Bacau is about right here. The closest missionaries to us would be about right in this area, which is about a six-hour drive from us. So we do feel a little isolated. And because my wife has been living in Dakar for the past 8 years, taking care of our kids, as they would go to boarding school there, I've been pretty much on my own out in Bacau. But every 2 months or so, I would come into Dakar to get refreshed, see my family, get supplies, and I'd come back out for another 2 months in this area. And so we have been living in Bacau for the past 28 years. Next.
So Paul says, I don't want you to be ignorant of the hardships that have happened to us, been shipwrecked, been beaten, and all of those things. Well, we want to tell you about some of our challenges and hardships out there. We have three seasons out where we are, hot, hotter, and hottest. It's just a really, I guess it gets down to about 70, 67, possibly in the less hot season. It feels nice and cool to us. We have swamp coolers. It's something that they use out in New Mexico and Arizona, where it kind of puts mist into the air. But that's one of the hardships. No matter how much you say, well, we've been there 28 years, you must be used to it. Heat, high heat is really, really difficult. It wears on you and tires you out. Over on the far one is garbage. It's like plastic sacks and things like that. They really have a hard time knowing, what do you do with all this garbage? Where do you put it? How do you take care of it? The government has tried some things. We've tried some things. It's just an overwhelming thing. Why that matters is that there's a hot, dry wind that's constantly blowing, and that will pick up the garbage and dirt, and it blows it into your face, your mouth, your nose, your eyes, and then that brings disease. And so that affects us, and it affects them as well. And so together, it's just an issue that we all have to face when we're there. In the middle, these are Hamza's feet. I don't know how many of y'all get our prayer letters, but he got really, really sick. I think in August of 1 year, he was out in a village. It was pretty amazing. The rains had come through and washed out the road. So they put him on a donkey cart, brought him to where the road was, and then men carried him on a stretcher across the river, put him on another donkey cart, and brought him to the town where we were. They had never seen anything like this before. He thought he was going to die when he was out in the village. He was amazed that he made it that far. And they tried to treat him with antibiotics and things like that. Couldn't. They took him on to a bigger town. They'd never seen anything like that. So they just took him back home, really, to die. He was on his bed. He hadn't moved in months. We got out there at Christmas time, and he's one of Erickson's group of friends. And the friend said, let's go visit Hamza. He's on his bed. He's, you know, not doing anything. We can encourage him. They went there, and this is Erickson's picture that he took of his feet. And he got home, and he said, Mom, please, can't we do something for Hamza? I'm not medically educated, so I pulled out my Where There Is No Doctor, the village health manual. I didn't find anything that kind of said maybe what it was. I didn't want to take him into the capital city unless I knew that this would be a help, because just the trip in is crazy, as we've talked about. So I got on the prayer letter that I sent out, put the pictures there, tried to explain what had happened to him. And everybody started praying, and people started sending me pictures of things, but not one of the pictures that they sent me really seemed to match either what his feet really looked like or what the story was of what happened to him. But a little lady in Atlanta, Miss Jackie, she forwarded the letter to a friend, doctor friend in Australia. And that doctor in Australia forwarded that letter to a doctor friend in Kenya. And that doctor friend in Kenya forwarded a letter to a doctor in Senegal, in Dakar, that I hadn't known about. That doctor friend wrote and said, yes, come in. I think we can work with this. So we brought Hamza in. It took a while to get permissions with his family and also with the elders of his neighborhood. But he came in and then began a 9-month process. The first doctor that saw him, the one that had said to come in, they didn't know what it was. The second doctor didn't know what it was. The third doctor didn't know what it was. But the fourth doctor did know what it was. It was a type of meningitis. It's just an amazing story. I mean, it's taking this long to tell you this much, and I'm not even covering 90% of all the other things that happened in the story. But now Hamza is back out in Bakel. He's walking around. He lost most of his toes, which was a good thing. That's the way God made our bodies to work. And he stuffs rags in where the toes are, wears tennis shoes. He's walking to school, and he has a future. He wants to be an electrician. And he knows that so many people prayed for him. He knows that so many people gave finances to make this possible. And he writes me from time to time to just say, please tell everybody who prayed for me, thank you so much, and that he can never repay you, and that he's trusting that God will repay you for the blessing that you sent in his life. Still not following Jesus, but he is a walking miracle to himself and in his neighborhood, because everybody in Bakel knew that he was probably going to die. So just amazing for that. Next.
So some other hardships that we face are these sandstorms, as you can see in this picture, and that's exactly what they look like. When they come from a distance, they come across from the adjacent country to us, which is Mauritania, and it'll be a huge wall of just red sand. And when we see that, you have about 10 to 15 minutes to make cover, to try to find a place to hide, to get things out of that, because that will cause a lot of damage. If you have stuff sitting out, roofs get blown off, people get hurt in it. And I learned the hard way the very first time I was in a sandstorm. I saw everyone running. I had no idea why they were running. And I'm just driving my motorcycle through town because I was in town. And all of a sudden that sandstorm hit me, and I was flipped off my bike, and somebody came out and grabbed me and took me into their house, and we waited it out. So I learned really quickly what a sandstorm was about. But it does cause a lot of problems. And you do get some of these in your hurricanes here. You'll get some of our sand that is found in your hurricane. So when
Sorry.
We get a big one like this come through, we'll give it a name and we'll kind of follow it and listen. And when you guys get that name of the real hurricane, we'll say, oh, yeah, that was probably so-and-so hurricane. So we're sorry about that, but they would come from our area. Another one of our hardships is water, you know, finding clean water. Everything happens at the river. Everyone gathers there in the morning. That's where the news is passed on to each other. Everyone greets each other, but they wash their clothes, they wash their dishes, they wash themselves, and they wash their animals, and then they get their drinking water all from the same spot, and they take it home. So it's very dirty, very muddy kind of water. So you can imagine the disease that goes on from that. The town itself now has running water from a well, but it does cost money, and a lot of the people can't afford to pay for the running water, so they choose to still get their water from the river. Another one of our hardships is snakes. We have a lot of very, very poisonous snakes, and so one of the ministries that God has opened up to us is treating snake bite victims, because in our village there's no antivenom, there's nothing like that. So if someone gets bit, say on their hand or their finger, they'll go to the hospital, and the hospital won't have anything to really give to them because the antivenom is just so expensive and they can't keep it out there in that heat. And so then they'll go to their imam, and their imam, they'll have to pay him a lot of money so he can do a prayer over them and give them these special charms that he's supposed to wear to protect them. And after 2 or 3 days and their whole arm is swelling up and they know they're on their deathbed, then they let's go see the missionaries. Maybe their God can help us. And so by the time they come to us, they are brought usually on a stretcher by family members, and they'll ask us if we can do anything for them. So the first thing I'll ask them, I'll say, well, we can only do it if you will let us pray in the name of Jesus. And they're not going to argue with you. They're going to say, you do whatever you have to do. And so we'll pray in the name of Jesus over the person. Elizabeth will get a prayer letter out really fast, so our prayer warrior is going to be praying for her, and she'll give you a name. And then I use this little zapper. It's a little cattle prod zapper that fits in your hand, takes 2 9-volt batteries, and has 2 little prongs that stick out. And what I'll do, say they were bit on their finger, and it's swollen all the way up to here. What I'll do is after we've prayed over them, I'll start above the pain, and I'll just give them little zaps, just like that, and just follow the blood all the way down, giving these zaps. And this will take 2 or 3 guys to hold this person down, because these zaps are very painful, and so it takes people to hold them down as you're working down to where he was bit, and you just keep coming back up like this. and then you set your watch for 3 hours. Every 3 hours for 3 days, you pray and you zap them, and you pray and you zap them. And God has healed every single one that has come to us. I mean, we've had many that have come to us. And so the word has gotten out. If people get bit in a village that are 2 days away, they'll put them on a donkey cart and they'll bring them to our house. And we've been able to use this as a ministry to show that our God is powerful. And we, and you all play a major part of that by praying if you're on our prayer letter list. So we appreciate you doing that. Next one. Another. This does look hilarious. Yeah. So in this culture, there's always room for another person. And if you're going down out to the bush like where we are, there's people walking and they're waving down, so they'll throw them up in there and they go. The bad thing about this is that our roads are really, really, really bad. And so there's some holes there that are 2 or 3 feet deep and really big, so you swerve. And when that truck makes a swerve, 2 or 3 of these guys are going off. And when they go off, it's funny, but when they go off, you may be the car right behind them, and you may hit somebody. That's happened many times, not to me, but to others where they've been hit by a vehicle. Or when this big truck swerves to miss a hole, thing is so top-heavy, just comes over, and then a lot of people are hurt. And we've had to help people in those kind of situations to get to a next town where there's a clinic where they can be helped. So besides the roads being really terrible, this kind of adds to all that chaos of it. Next.
On one of the things there, that's the mattress. They're carrying all of their things, but it just looks like they're ready for if they get tipped off, they'll, you know, fall with the mattress and they can land. Yeah. Yep, so we went to the Soninke people of Senegal. There's 2.5 million of them. They're found in Senegal and Mali and the Islamic Republic of Mauritania. That's important, the Islamic Republic of Mauritania, because it's governed by Islamic law. Senegal and Mali followed France, their colonial powers or whatever, in their separation of church and state. And although it's 94-95% Muslim, they separate the governance of Senegal from the religion of Islam. And they do it in a variety of different ways. The Soninke people are 100% Muslim. They're farmers and agriculture. They're involved in all of that. Next. They're very, very hospitable, generous, loving. They can be found all over the world. Probably 1 out of every 7 Soninke travel to Europe, to the United States, even as far as China, looking for work so that they can make money. They can send it back to their families so their families can have something to eat and to live and to clothe themselves. 500,000 of them in France. There's about 20,000 of them in New York. They're also found in Cleveland, and I just heard that there is a group of them, not sure how many, in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is where Annie Lisa is. So we're hoping to maybe make a connection there as well.
Next.
So,
one of our ministries is sports. We do a lot of different sports, and this is what opens the doors to the youth. And so, soccer has become one of the passions of mine. I was an All-American soccer player in college, and so I always wanted to be able to use it somehow. And after many years of living in a village, some high school boys came to me and asked me if I would coach them in soccer, and I was really excited. I know they didn't have any equipment, they didn't have any balls, and they figured probably I would be able to help them out with that kind of stuff, but they didn't realize the passion that I had to be able to use this as a ministry to be able to share Jesus to these kids. And so a lot of my time is doing that. I have anywhere from 25 to 35 Muslim boys aging 15 to 20 that will come out for my soccer program. It usually begins at the end of January, beginning February, and we go all the way to May, and we'll play a lot of different villages. But before I begin every practice, I'll do a devotional, and I'll do a prayer, and then we'll begin the practices. You can go to the next one. And then we have basketball. This is another one of those sports that, because the Senegalese love basketball, in Africa, Senegal is one of the top African countries of basketball players. In fact, you've probably, if you've been following that March Madness, you have followed a few Senegalese players that have played on some of these teams that are really good. So we get a lot of these kids that are wanting to play, and so we have church teams that come out, and they will put on this upwards basketball. And so it's an opportunity where kids from the States will come out, they will share their testimonies to these kids, and then they will teach them basketball. And so this court was built by a church team that came out quite a few years ago, and we're able to use this ministry, use sports as a way to communicate Jesus, the love of Jesus, to these people. Next.
Actually, you're missing one.
Yeah, one was in there.
Can you go back and see? There should be another one for the soccer thing, and they have, like, awards.
Right. Okay, well, it's not in there. But anyway, I will just say, just leave it here for a second, that at the end of every soccer season, I do a banquet for these boys. And the whole town gets whiffed that I'm doing a banquet, and they all want to come to my banquet. But I limit it just to my boys, because otherwise there's just too much noise. Everyone is talking. They can't hear. And so I take them up on the top of my roof of my house so no one else can get in, because they will climb my gates down below. They will be in. But if I lock my house doors, they can't get up on the roof of my house. And so I'll do this big banquet, and so it's an awards night. These kids have never gotten an award for anything. They don't get awards in school. They don't get awards for anything. So I have a whole table full of awards that I give out according to which position you play, who is the best, who's the best sportsman, who scored the most goals, which goalie played the best, and they'll get awards. But at the end of that time, I go online the few days before, and I find this. Yeah, Athletes in Actions put out different movies and videos of professional soccer players. Now, if there's a professional soccer player that's good, my kids know about it. They watch every soccer game that's ever played. They know every professional soccer player in the world, and they know them by name if they're good. And so I'll look for these professional soccer players that are good, that have given their lives to Christ, and they give their testimonies in French. And I will choose three or four of these guys, and I will show the goals of the year, of all the goals that these professional players have played, which is really powerful. And then these men will give their testimonies to these Muslim boys in French. And it's just powerful. They'll sit there without a noise listening, because they're wanting to grab everything these professional soccerers have to play. So we're just trying to invest Jesus into these boys. I have them for about 4 years. And then from there, they move on to the bigger league. So I only have a limited amount of time to be able to invest Jesus into them, and that's probably the only time they'll ever hear about Jesus. Okay, you can go on to the next one now. Okay.
Another ministry that we have are church teams coming over. We have ones that come and work with medical, veterinarian, building, all sorts of different things. We have groups of as small as 2 or as large as 15 or 18. We have mothers and daughters that come, fathers and sons, family groups, or just a group from a church. Sometimes a church will say, we have a building team. Can you use that in any way? Or another time a church might say, we've got a group of people that want to come. What projects do you have that you could use us? We're happy any way that they come. It's it is such an encouragement to us. And I don't know if I can explain this really well. You know, for over there, when they think of America, they think of the most powerful country in the world. So for somebody to come from the most powerful country in the world, and they didn't go to Kenya to go on a safari, they didn't go to the capital of Senegal to do the touristy thing, they came all the way out to Bakel, which is in the middle of nowhere, on the way to nowhere. They came all the way there just to be a part of their lives, to share in any kind of a way. I mean, isn't that what happened for us? God, Jesus, most came from the Most High, the most powerful anything of all the eternal ages, and he came down, and he didn't go to the top country of the world, Rome, or anything like that. He came and he was born in a manger. We have a little taste of that, and that's what it means to them. Even if you came all the way and all you did was, hi, how are you, you know, you just smiled, that would already be a huge ministry like that. But to then come and do anything else, that's a help, that's an encouragement. It's just an amazing, what a testimony that is. It also makes bridges for us. We all aren't, I mean, we've been here all our lives if we needed to learn all about building, all about medical, all about veterinarian, all about all of those things. We aren't trained in all of those things. But if somebody can come and do those things, then it exponentially multiplies our connections in a variety places of society. Just a quick story of how that can work out. We can be driving from the capital city out to Bakel, and there'll be a police stop. It's for everybody. And we'll stop, and he'll go, oh, Mission Evangelique, which is evangelical mission. It's like, where are you going? We'll say Bakel, and he goes, oh, are you the ones that came out and vaccinated my cousin's wife's cows? And we'll say, yeah. And he goes, oh, I don't need to see your paperwork or nothing. We so appreciate what you did. And that was like 9 years ago. But they've remembered all the way till then what that did. Well, that in a variety of ways is the same thing. Next. Yeah, so we had this guy in the middle. His name is Ben. He asked us, he said, I just feel like God is calling me to do a short-term mission trip. But I'm not really like go out and preach everywhere type of a guy. I repair motorcycles. I'm a motorcycle mechanic. Could you use that over there? And we said, absolutely, come. So he came, and the motorcycle mechanics are underneath shade trees. They don't like really have like places. It's just right underneath a shade tree, and they're working on bikes, scooters, and motorcycles because they carry their water pumps and their generators to run the water pumps out to their farms, and the roads are terrible, so it's constantly breaking down. And he just spent day after day just sitting there with them, learning from them. They learned from him. Erickson, my son, translated for him all during that time, and it made a connections in a whole different group of people that we hadn't ever been involved in. So we love to have people come from churches, from groups or families to come and visit and see what you've been praying about and be involved and connected in a face-to-face kind of way. So we're ready. Our welcome mat is dusty and sandy.
Next.
But yeah.
So I've heard that Kurt has been, Pastor Kurt's been wanting to have a chicken farm. So you can get some ideas from me. I've never done a chicken farm in my life. I had to do all my research online and on the internet trying to figure out. Many years ago, we were trying to think about, you know, what could we do for these Muslims who become believers and say they are persecuted or they lose their jobs, they lose their families, and they could have something, a means that they could make a living. And so we thought of the chicken farm. And so we got a piece of land, a very small piece, and we built this this big chicken farm. So we can only take in about 400 chickens at a time. They come in these little cardboard boxes. They're about this big. We have to order them from the capital city. So they take the truck route, which will take anywhere from 20 to 24 hours. And you can imagine in a little cardboard box at 120 degrees, they don't get any water along the way. So many of them will perish in that trip. But when they finally do get to our area, the believers are the ones that run this chicken farm. And most of the people don't know that they are believers, but I only hired the believers to run it. And they're the ones that care for the chickens, and they do all the work of it. And then I try to teach them in this process because many of them don't know what tithing is. How do you tithe? And so when I sit there and I say, okay, we're going to put this amount of money aside for the next chicks that we have to buy. We have to put this aside for the food for the next ones. We have to put this aside for paying for the water, for the electricity. And then I'll say, we're going to give 10% to God. Why do we need to do that? And so I'll explain it all to them, just teaching them that we always give a tenth of what we have earned. And then whatever is left, they get to pocket themselves. And so it's a process of teaching them. We do devotionals every morning here. And these chickens, after about 40 days, are slaughtered. And we hope the next batch comes in. And we can't even get them in fast enough. They sell off so fast. So we're wanting to actually buy another plot of land. And so there is a piece of land. You can go to the next one. I think it might be there. No. Okay, so I have a different slideshow on my computer than I do on that thumb drive. But anyway, you can go back. Go ahead and go back. And so what we want to do is actually buy another piece of land that is adjacent to the chicken farm. And so then we can actually grow the business much, much bigger and then be able to take some of these chickens out to the villages by scooters and things like that. So you can be praying. If you want to help participate, there's a lot of needs here, and you can just ask us afterwards, and we'll be able to fill you in, and I can give Kurt some details on things I've learned about growing these chickens. Okay, next.
This is a lot cooler here. Yeah. With a lot more rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we went out in 1991, we said to everybody that was wanting to pray for us and things that Muslim ministry is really, really difficult. If you're wanting to be committed to a ministry that, you know, in the first year they're having thousands come to Jesus, that Muslim ministry is not normally that way. And so we asked people to be willing to hang in there for the long haul. We also privately said to God, you know, there's many, as you think of your salvation story, there's many links in the chain that brought you to Jesus. All of us love to be the link in the chain that was right there at the minute that you prayed. That's so exciting and so glorious, so encouraging. But how many of us are willing to be those links that are all happening before that particular point? And in God's economy, whoever is sowing the seed is a part of the whole story of that. So we said, even if we go, and people don't really hear about us or know about us, and it's two missionaries later after us that we're willing for that. And it took that amount of time, so long. It was amazing to us. It sounds long that after 21 years, the first one chose to follow the way of Jesus. But for us, it was already a gift because we thought we would give our whole lives and that nothing would happen, humanly speaking, that we could see. So much is happening that God is doing, but we wouldn't see that. So there is now 8 people who are a part of this gathering of Jesus in Bakel. 3 of them were born and raised in Bakel. The rest of them come from Nigeria and from Gambia. They're there to look for work, which is so amazing to me. Why would you go to the middle of nowhere for a job? But anyway, they're there. We gather together. In that church, there's 5 different languages. So, and they're completely, they're not dialects of the same language. It's 5 completely different languages. So the service has to be translated several different times. So however long Pastor Kurt preaches, you would double that or triple that, and that would be how the service is, so that everybody can hear and understand what that is. But isn't that an awesome picture, even in the midst of doing those things, an awesome picture of what it's going to be like at his throne? There will be some from every tribe, tongue, and nation. And we get to see that in reality every single Sunday as we gather together.
And this fellow right here, his name is John. He is a Nigerian. He's my co-pastor, leader, that works with me. He's been just doing it for the past couple of years with me. Actually, he's a true man of God. His Bible knowledge is unbelievable. He's a man of prayer. And so he keeps things running and going over there while I'm here. And there's an app now on your phones that's called WhatsApp. And with that, it's free. So he can call me. He can send me videos. He can send me pictures. So he'll do videos of the church service there, and he'll let me know what's going on. He goes to the chicken farm, takes pictures, and sends them to me. So he keeps me up to date. It's the first time in 28 years that when I have been away from Bakel that I felt connected to Bakel because of John. But be praying for him, because the enemy will try every scenario to attack him and discourage him and his family. So next. Okay, well, this is where these went. Okay. The projects.
Yeah, so the prayer project that we have is, prayer is so easy to do. It's not rocket science, right? You just start praying to God. It's very easy to do, but it is very, very difficult to be consistent and to be faithful. And we believe, Rick and I together, we believe that it's an entire team. You get to see us up at the front of the church. We're the ones that go over there, but we don't see that we're like something. We see us together as you heard our stories. What did we keep saying? I got out and made a prayer letter so that y'all could be praying with us as it was happening. And that's what we believe. A lot of people will say, oh, you're so amazing. I'm complimented and I love that. I'm not putting that down. But in our minds, the heroes are the people who pray for us. 28 years and counting, you're believing the promise. You're not even there to be able to see it happening. But as you live your lives here, You continue to pray. You're faithful. You're hanging in there. Even in this instant society that wants to kind of say, I mean, just think about it. If you had somebody that worked a job and there were no results after 28 years, like big results, you'd kind of be like, okay, I need to fire this guy and like get somebody else in. But you're believing with God that he's at work, even though we can't humanly see all these things happening. So you guys are our heroes for praying with us, for financially supporting us, for encouraging us by letter. We're a team together. We thank you. Every time we come back, we try to raise more prayer warriors to stand with us because we know we would not be able to stand unless it was because of you. You know, as Moses' hands were held up, they physically got tired. He couldn't hold them up, even though he knew that he had to hold them up for the battle to be won. He physically got tired. And there's many times that Rick and I'll be like, so many different things will be happening, as has happened through the years. And we'll just be like, I don't know if we can keep on going. And we'll just remind each other, no, there's people who are praying. They're hanging in there, so we need to hang in there. And so we do. We encourage each other back and forth on the team. Thank you so much.
You can turn it one more time, I think. Okay, well. So some of the other projects that you guys can be praying about, these are things that we'll be heading back in January of 2020. And one is this, the old Jeep project. We are wanting to replace this truck. This is it's a 1984 Jeep Scrambler. It actually doesn't have anything Jeep on it anymore other than the carcass. It's got Toyota engine and Peugeot parts just because we couldn't find those kind of parts over there. So you can be praying about that. We still have a need. Actually, this has gone up. So we're still lacking $10,000 of this $18,000, something that you can be praying about. You can go to the next one. And the chicken farm. We're wanting to buy more piece of land and also to be able to buy a few scooters that we can take these chickens out into the villages. In fact, this is up also. I think we're still lacking about $4,500 in the chicken farm. So you can be praying about that. If you want to get involved in that, you can get our information and call us or write us. We'll be glad to help you understand it further. And one more. This is this is just a picture of a hut, but our house is there. We have been in it for 23 years, and the house is made all out of cement brick. Even the roof is cement brick, but it's all cracking, and we don't feel it's too safe anymore. So we're wanting to restructure some of the roofing parts of our house and do some work on it. And we're still lacking about 2,000 of the house. So you can go on to the next one. And the sports project. This was, you know, these banquets and the awards for these kids. It does cost money to be able to keep this kind of program going. Even the soccer fields. I don't have time to tell you about it, but the government keeps taking our soccer fields away from us because we do all the work of making it look nice, and all of a sudden they come by and go, whoa, that looks pretty nice. So they'll take it and they'll build something on it. So we're actually wanting to buy our own land to be able to put our own soccer on it. So all these things are ways that, you know, people here can be involved, churches can be involved, families can be involved.
What's lacking on this
one? And this one is still lacking about $3,000. On this, on the sports program. One more, I think. Thank you. Thank you for the part that you all play. This slideshow is different than the one I have to do on my computer. For some reason, it got changed around a little bit, but no worries. It worked. And
same information. But
yeah. Thank you guys for the part that you play and for praying all these years for us. And it won't be 5 years from now on when you'll see us. Hopefully, we'll be back more frequently than that. And but we thank you for all that you do.